This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, here we go. It's another Brock and Salk podcast. Now on Wednesdays, new time, new date, or day of the week, I guess it is. Hey, buddy.
Hi.
How are we doing?
Something going on in town or something? Why do we have to adjust things around?
I know. A little change in schedule. We've always recorded this since we started doing it. Tuesdays at 8:30. And I'm now busy at that time. I'm on the air. I can't do this.
You are?
I am. Yes.
What?
The rumors are true. yeah, thank you. It was an interesting first couple of days on the show. Thank you. Brock is on the show with me every day at 7:45. If for some reason you listen to this podcast but haven't heard about the new show, I did start a new solo show on 710 ESPN Seattle daily from 6 to 10. Brock and I did 7 to 10. Brock, you're missing out on doing 6 a.m.
I thought you would have wanted
to do this.
Didn't we do 6 a.m. during playoff runs or something?
Yeah, 6 at 6, baby.
That was for two weeks.
Right. Yeah.
This is a little longer.
I can remember getting to day 4 of those 2 weeks after the excitement of, we're going to do this. Everyone in Seattle wants, everybody needs this extra hour. People are clamoring for it. Day 4 being like, I don't know.
I don't know. Me.
Well, if they lose to the Packers, we won't have to do 2 more weeks of this. So it wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah. Well, this is my new life. So thanks, guys. I appreciate that. And it hasn't been that bad, honestly, to start. I'm older now. It's much easier to wake up before 4 in the morning.
When you're in your 50s, everything's a lot easier.
All right.
You start naturally waking up at 4.
Yeah, you're taking a leak how many, 4 times a night?
I do that more now. That is true.
Well, you just stay up. You just get right in the shower, Mike.
No, we can't quite pull that off. Yeah, no, I am. Yeah, the peeing thing at night definitely happens as you get older. Plus, this green smoothie diet, Brock, I pee constantly.
Are you still doing it? I thought that was over.
Well, the cleanse part is over, but it's been so effective that I'm continuing, and it's super effective.
Brock, didn't you understand? He's on the radio, right? He has to look amazing for the radio.
I want to be healthy. It's not about my looks, Howdy. And it's also about the fact that I want my clothes to fit. I don't want to have to go spend money on a whole new wardrobe because I got fat again. So I'm trying to maintain it. And honestly,
plant-based turn.
It's a plant-based turn. It's a lot of it's a lot of greens and fruit.
You and Coach Pete.
Pete and I are going to talk again now every day after the game. So I kind of have to
you have something to relate to.
Something new. Yes.
You know, I've also taken a plant-based turn.
Pete, I've taken a plant-based turn.
So, Pete, I've taken this plant-based turn, and I pee frequently at night.
Yes.
And do you realize, is your poo a lot different, too?
I'm not going to talk about this.
Right.
We're not going
there.
Brock,
sorry.
Yes, but we're not going to talk about that. It's not part of this conversation.
Sorry.
Can you believe it's Seahawks game week? Does it feel like it? I mean, maybe it's just not having the game last week and just the train wreck of the preseason, but it doesn't feel like, go time. But it is.
No. No, there's been no build up. There's been no discovery. Like, this preseason was not a preseason of any discovery whatsoever. It was a preseason of hibernation. We're just going to put guys on ice. Like, we're not going to necessarily play people. How many position battles were won in training camp? Maybe a couple in the secondary, maybe.
Well, how many of the corners, we don't even know. We don't know who the nickel is still. I think it's going to be Marquise Blair, though, right? It's going to be Blair over Amadi, right?
I think so.
I think it has to be.
I think so.
They spent a second-round pick on him. If it's not, head should roll. Well, come on. He's healthy. You moved him from safety to nickel. You spent an ungodly amount of money in draft picks, capital, et cetera, at safety. If he's not your starting nickel, that's another god-awful pick. And I don't think it is, by the way. I think he will be your starting nickel. I think he will be a good player. I think we will see big nickel with him in there.
Yeah,
and it will be effective for them this year. So I am not ripping it. But if it's Amadi and not him, that would be very troubling to me.
If it's Amadi and Amadi's not good,
it'll be troubling to me either way. I mean,
if Amadi's one of the better safeties, nickel corners in the game.
But even then, it'll still sort of bother me because you could have just put Marquise Blair in your secondary at safety where you drafted him to play instead of trading for 2 other guys, a lot of draft capital, and then spending a bunch of money on them.
True. True.
So it's not a good pick either way, unless he ends up kind of getting into this role and really becoming a big part of it, which I think he will. I love
him. Maybe he turns into a nickel linebacker, right? Maybe Umadi is so good that all of a sudden, you know, we can put Marquise in the box and he can play violently enough in those passing situations there.
Isn't
Jamal
Adams already kind of your nickel linebacker?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, we're talking big nickel.
Well, it's huge nickel.
Well, no, now it's big dime. Now we're talking big dime, big nickel. Okay. It's all of it. And you got in Kenny Norton, one of the great maestros, one of the great composers of defensive scheme and innovation. So they'll be just fine. They'll sort it all out.
Are you being negative?
No, I'm super positive. I'm super, super stoked.
Seems like you're a little negative.
No, I'm not
trying
to be
a little sarcastic.
I'm not accustomed to Brock's sarcasm. You have to kind of really understand the meter. So it's like, wait, are you making fun? What are you doing here today?
Yeah, I don't know. It just does not feel like a game week. And I don't want to be negative because it's a totally different. It's a totally different airspace that Pete Carroll has been in. They handled preseason completely different than they've handled any preseason before.
But I think it's fair to say that that's not your preferred method. You are a practice guy, a preseason guy. You take your reps. I mean, son of a coach. I think it's fair to say and to assume that you're not wild about the way they handled
preseason. No, I'm not. I'm not, because I think a lot of the other teams that handled it the same way as you got a lot of other work in. They got to compete against other teams. They spent 3 days in the buildup to those scrimmages, actually doing good competitive work on a practice field, good on good with other teams. You did not do that. You didn't have any of that work. You had multiple sit-ins, which, you know, is all fine now and looks like, hey, things got sorted out and they're practicing this week. Dwayne's practicing, Diggs practicing, Jamal's contract got done. So, you know, at the finish line, all of it looks fine. But, you know, there's some beauty in that practice.
Yeah, you're
on that practice field.
The process is important to you. I will say I like it. I mean, obviously, as a sports radio host, it's annoying because I want to be able to talk about the preseason games and their stars and what they look like. But as a fan of the Seahawks, they're almost, I mean, other than Ben Burkert, like they're 100% healthy, Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of their guys is healthy going into the season. And guess what? That's especially important this year.
Yep.
When they don't have a lot of depth.
True.
They need health this year more than ever because their top end guys are pretty darn good. I was doing this on the show this week, just going through the names of guys that we haven't seen. And it's like, oh yeah, you got DK Metcalf. Oh yeah, you got Tyler Lockett. Oh yeah, Chris Carson. Oh yeah, Russell Wilson. Oh yeah, you got Bobby Wagner. Oh yeah, you got, you know, you go on, you know, Gerald Everett, who we haven't seen, and Jamal Adams. Like, when you really start thinking about the difference between what we witnessed in the preseason and what they are, it's extreme, and all those guys are healthy. So I've always been afraid of injury, right? I mean, I argued about this with Pete years ago when it came to the Earl Thomas thing. So I can't very well criticize them for this, but I will say the one thing that it leaves completely unknown is the one guy that is probably the most important figure on this team, and that's Shane Waldron.
Yeah, I heard you saying that on your show this week, and I was like, ooh.
Isn't he?
I kind of like that, and that's not even your BBNN bias.
No.
What's their mascot at BBNN?
We're the Knights.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Knights of the Round Table.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha, gotcha.
How crazy is it that the entire trajectory of the Seahawks' future hinges on Shane Waldron's success?
I mean, I think it's not surprising that a BBNN guy is in charge of how the Seahawks go for the... No, it is incredibly surprising, but don't you think it's true?
Yes.
I mean, he is essentially not only being asked to run the offense this year as a first-time coordinator with a new offense to this scheme, with quarterback and coach who he's never worked with and doesn't really have any relationship with heading into this, and if it doesn't go well, there's a decent chance that that quarterback and coach will divorce. Forever altering the future of the Seattle Seahawks. I was like, whoa.
You think he thought about all that? I mean, he's a BBNN guy, so he's probably
pretty
thought
smart.
About all
pretty
that.
Pretty smart dude.
In the interview process, he probably put those pieces together. He's like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
If this is
going to
be my first gig, if I'm going to get in the incubator of a coordinator, yep, let's just go all in. Let's just get thrown right into the inferno. Let's just, you know, all of the pressure, all of the expectation, all of the relationship managing that I got to do as well. And oh, by the way, a head coach, it's going to be in my headset undoubtedly in Indianapolis on Sunday in big moments. And Russell Wilson right on the other side, who I've got to make sure he's a happy guy this year and make sure I take care of him. And yeah, there is a tremendous amount on his plate this year.
What is your experience with first-time coordinators?
What do you think of John Donovan last weekend?
Well, that doesn't...
Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
Everybody knew that John Donovan was going to face plant. That wasn't a surprise. Shane Waldron doesn't come with those expectations.
Right. Did you ever work with any first-time coordinators?
Ooh, that's a good question in my ears. Let's see. My dad, no. Scott Linehan, no. He had called plays with the Seahawks. It was Holmgren that ran the whole show. Gil Haskell, Tom Moore. Was Tom Moore a first-time coordinator?
I don't think so. I think he'd been around. Yeah.
No, I don't think
he was 900.
I think he... as I roll through that, no, I just had the experience though. I mean, much better one because Donovan was an OC actually at Penn State and flamed out miserably there. But Jake Peets, who comes from the Sean McVay tree, is who at Orgeron at LSU hired and, you know, probably even more pressure, frankly, on Ed to get that one right.
How'd that go?
Not so good. Yeah. Couldn't run it particularly well. But I don't think it was like terrible calls or poor adjustments like the UW game. I think it was just more of, wow, yeah, we don't match up with these guys. And our group up front's not very good. But there is. I bet if you had true serum for Jake Peets, I talked to him a bunch, talked to him on
the
field.
Are you saying Jake Heaps?
Jake
Peets. What's going on?
Jake Peets is his name.
Jake Peets.
Jake
Peets.
P-E-E-T-Z, I believe. But yeah, Jake Peets.
Oh, Jake Peets.
Yes. Right. Yeah, longtime analyst. Honestly, like a very parallel. I'm sorry it's confusing. But actually, peel the onion back. It is a very compelling parallel because he forever had been an analyst and worked, and his resume was rich and smart guy, and had been with Nick Saban a few years, had been with, you know, background with Sean McVay, had NFL college experience. Like, yeah, he checks every box, kind of like Shane Waldron checks every box. He's been wonderful places. He's had, you know, immense experience. He's more and should be more than ready for this opportunity, but it is still the first time ever doing it.
Yeah, and one of the things I've heard you talk about, Brock, and maybe you can go into greater detail, is just the rhythm that those guys get in and sort of the chess match.
Can you be a play ahead? Those are what the elite ones do. They are constantly a step ahead. And on top of that, and just as important, especially in this one on Sunday in particular, what kind of adjustments can you make? Your personnel has not played together, right? With people hitting you on the other side. You know, you've got a pretty accomplished group that you're playing against defensively with some talented people who likewise didn't play a lot of folks in the preseason and is probably going to throw some things at you. Pretty innovative defensive coordinator at Indianapolis that, you know, has done good things. So not only the play ahead, which is cliche, but it's then series to series making adjustments. So you don't have a New York Giants game like last year where you get to the end of the game and go, man, we didn't really adjust. Man, we really went in thinking we could do this and it's not working. And instead of spending four quarters trying to do it or play, you know, last gasp effort in the final 3 or 4 minutes, hey, let's make that adjustment in the first quarter. Let's make that and have that kind of communication as a staff, as a group, as a system, so we can make those adjustments quicker.
So let's see if we can just, I mean, Shane Waldron, as we said, really important spot, very difficult challenges. If you were to start going through and listing all of the challenges ahead of him, and this is not saying he can't overcome any of them at all, but just to give a sense of how difficult this guy's job is. One, the Pete Russ issue, right? Two, teaching a new system to people, right? Whether it's the language or the concepts, he's got to import this new system. So he's got to know it, and then he's got to teach it. Three, he's got to call the plays. Four, he's got to have a sense of how to adjust along the way to what the defense is doing. Yeah. And then five, he's got to have a conviction in big moments about what he wants to do and what plays he wants for the most important moments of every game.
Yes.
And then add in the creativity and then add in the personal skills and everything else. It is a heck of a job. I don't know what he's getting paid, but it's probably not enough to do everything that he's being asked to do right now.
And oh, by the way, your margin is zero. The ceiling's a championship or bust. So this is not, oh, you know, I did some great things. You know, a lot of these coordinators love to put together on their resumes as they interview for jobs, and they work their way up and they build on their experiences. Yeah, you know, we did this. We had the most explosive plays. You know, we were one of the top five scoring offenses. We were top three rushing offense. No, done all that. All those boxes have been checked by your predecessors. It's about one thing. It's about making sure that your quarterback is an MVP, because if he's an MVP, you can win a Super Bowl. And if he's not the MVP, I don't know how you win the Super Bowl with the supporting cast around him in the division you're in the conference you're in.
Really?
So if Russell is not an MVP or doesn't play or isn't in that or doesn't get it, if Russell Wilson, I'll say it this way.
Okay.
If Russell Wilson does not get MVP votes this year, which he's never gotten, they will not win a Super Bowl. I think I could say that definitively and declaratively.
Then let me ask a follow-up to that. What does Russell need to do to get MVP votes?
Put up wacky...
Win the Super Bowl. I mean, it's back and forth. They have now. What does he need to do?
Oh, I mean, wacky, phenomenal numbers through the entirety of a season. He's done it for two-thirds of a season. Well,
hold on. What does he need to do to put up wacky numbers? I don't mean what do the numbers have to be, but what parts of the game need to be successful for him to have them?
It's touchdowns, interceptions, it's yards, it's 70% completion. It's things that he has done for massive stretches of his career.
But does it mean they have to throw the ball a certain percentage of the time?
I don't think necessarily that, no.
It's not yards.
I don't know. He throws for 4,000 yards, but it's 35 touchdowns to five interceptions, and they win 12 or 13 games in this division. He's going to be the MVP. He's going to be the MVP. I mean, those are the silly kind of numbers that Aaron put up last year, that Mahomes puts up. Those you got to live in that stratosphere. And I think that is, honestly, you mentioned all of those. Managed relationships, there's lots of them. Changing the whole language, yep, absolutely. You know, being a step ahead and executing, adjusting, all of those things are 100% true. But ultimately, the bottom line is your quarterback and his play. Because he's got to be elite for this team, for this in this division to win enough games to, you know, to say, yeah, man, Shane Waldron, he did it. He was super successful. That's a hard spot to be in, man. There is hardly any more altitude to climb, right? Not to heap even more pressure on him or to present this in a negative way, but this is a job you're inheriting, man. You've got a 10-year guy that's a future Hall of Famer. And oh, by the way, the offense has been statistically very, very good. And he has been the second most efficient passer in the history of the league. And I think one more games through whatever nine seasons, anybody else in the league.
I'm curious about some of that, though, because one of the things that supposedly is so different here is that instead of Russ throwing it deep down the field, right, where he needs to make the occasional great throw, the idea here is that there are going to be more throws, right, but that aren't quite as challenging.
Correct.
How do they do that without it being dink and dunk, but without it being too risky?
Because it's still those shots are going to come off your play action.
Well, then you still have to run the ball.
Absolutely. Right? And they do. And this system does it. And Shanahan does it. McVay does it. And LaFleur does it. And,
think you know, Carroll's not going to run the ball?
I think he is. No, yeah. I do. Yeah.
You got to close the circle.
You got to have balance.
Circle of toughness.
You do. You have to have balance, and you have to have plenty of shot plays that come off of all of those looks. And yeah, there should be more gimmies. That's how I think I'll characterize him over the course of the season.
And so gimme is where he schemes someone open for
us. That's exactly right. It's what Sean McVay, when he evaluates himself. And I remember this last year doing a couple Rams games. And McVay goes back, and especially in his first 15 that he spends a lot of time on, right, and adapts and tweaks each and every week, he looks at his first 15 and says, okay, how many times was your primary open? Did I just give you, you know, right, that gimme?
Mm-hmm.
That completion is there because I set you up for success. In practice, you can script for success. In practice, you can set up this play versus this defense, and, you know, you get this guy open, and we can script for success. The old West Coast system, Bill Walsh, Mike Holmgren, who I was under, hey, man, we're going to have a very efficient practice. We're going to complete 90% of our passes. We're going to feel great about ourselves because we're going to script for success. That's how we feel rhythm, right? That's how we feel right, success. You have defensive-minded head coaches, and they're like, screw that. Script this. You know, I'm gonna make you look bad during practice. I want to make it as miserable
and
as hard on you in practice so that when you get to the game, it's a whole lot easier. So you have
that
both.
Seems like a much smarter way of doing it, by the way.
Could be. Yeah, I would agree in this day and age, especially as innovative as things are. Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, just forget defense, offense. Like, that's just, then what, you get out there and you're like, well, that doesn't look the way it did in practice. I don't know what to do.
Shane Waldron comes from that mindset of watching Sean McVay be very critical and very hard on himself, spend an immense amount of time in preparation to say, okay, you know what, for Jared Goff, the last 4 years, we wanted to make sure to get him in rhythm, to get the offense going, to score points. Man, that primary target, right? Number one or number two, your primary guys are open. I am creating openings for you, gimmies for you.
It will be so interesting then to see whether or not Russ throws them. I mean, one of the major criticisms of Russ is that sometimes it's there and he doesn't trust it, right? Which is why he holds on to the ball and why he ends up taking more sacks and all that, that he doesn't necessarily trust that that first thing is going to be open. Now, maybe that was part of the scheme. Mm-hmm. But these things get so complicated. Like, oh, Russ didn't do this, but maybe it's because of that. Like, you can really spin yourself around in circles trying to figure out what was really a culprit, which is why football is such a fascinating conversation every week.
I think you can also look last year when, you know, some of the timing throws that he did throw.
Yes.
One was a pick six because he threw a bubble screen that was on a timing throw and somebody screwed their side
right.
up. And then it went the other way.
That was in the playoffs. I mean, that literally helped them lose a game in the playoffs.
Timing play. Yes. He did what he was supposed to do, and that's what happened.
And maybe that one play, as much as anything else, is why Brian Schottenheimer is no longer the coordinator. Of like, you know what, man, if I'm going to trust it and that's what it leads to, I'm done.
Did
I can't
happen?
Work with it.
Did that
I'm
happen
trying to
another
remember.
Time? Maybe
that happened in the Super Bowl?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, no kidding.
I think that happened that time, too. I will say this, through this conversation, and I hadn't thought about, kind of back to the open of the show, that, wow, they're playing Sunday for real. It's the first of 17, which is wonky and wacky and weird to have 17, but it's the first of them. Honestly, through this conversation, I'm closing my eyes, and I'm picturing Russell on the move 10 to 15 times. And not on the move of like him having to drop back and scramble, and all of a sudden you've watched this system, right? You watched Shane Waldron. He was the passing game coordinator for Sean McVay. When the Seahawks played Jared Goff, what was Jared Goff? He's on the move quite a bit. Lots of play action, lots of nakeds.
And he's not particularly good at that.
He's not.
Russell is.
Russell's maybe the best in the game at that, save for Patrick Mahomes. He is way, way up there.
Yep.
So as I kind of picture this thing laying out, and we didn't see any of it, you know, through bits and pieces through training camp, saw none of it in the preseason, I think you're going to see Russell on the move a lot, which is advantage,
when you
Russell,
say on
advantage
the move,
scheme.
That's either what, sort of sprint out or bootleg or both?
Correct. All of it.
Okay.
All of it. It is straight nakeds off of run game. It is boots. It is all variations of play action.
Waggles?
Sure, boot and waggle.
Whoa. What's the difference between a boot and a waggle?
What depends.
A waggle?
Usually it's in the past, kind of strength and weakness kind of tells you which way you're going.
Oh, interesting. That's the only difference between a bootleg and a waggle?
Pretty much.
Huh.
Pretty much the same blocking scheme.
It's like a
scheme.
Hook and a slice?
But those are opposites. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just which way it's going.
Yeah. Or, you know, a fade and a draw. You can be a little bit more positive about
that.
There's no reason to go all the way to the negative.
Oh, that's just a really big fade.
I just
can't stop hitting it.
That's my buddy Vinay. The morning he comes up, he's like, oh, the driver is drawing today. Like, well, that's hooking, but I appreciate that you're calling it a draw.
Yeah,
it's much more fade today. Yeah, that's a slice.
Yeah.
You're slicing the ball is what you're doing. Yes, exactly. All right. Well, good. Honestly, Brock, talking to you, I feel better. I know you started off you started off sort of negative about this whole thing, but listening to you and talking to you, I feel better. The other thing I would hope gets added to this is, do we see more downhill handoffs rather than read option?
Yes.
Have to, right? A, because that's part of that system. B, because Russ is not fooling anybody anymore with the read option. He's not taking it himself. So what is the point of the read option?
Agreed.
And then, if Collins isn't great at that and Penny's not great at that, and I don't know that it's Carson's strength either. That was a Marshawn thing.
Yep.
Marshawn and I think Thomas Rawls were great for a limited time for Thomas Rawls.
You see T. Rawls' picture
you
with
see
Heaps?
T. Rawls popping up?
Dude. Not Pete's, but Heaps. Did you see that picture of him on Twitter?
I wanted to have Jake as a guest on the show today only to ask him about Thomas Rawls.
Did we ever talk to Pete about what happened?
No, he won't tell us. He won't tell us why Thomas Rawls disappeared. Like, he was better than Ezekiel Elliott, and then he was terrible. How did that happen?
I don't know.
How did he possibly fall so far?
Okay. And who could forget?
All right, maybe not quite that far. But I think those guys were good in read option. They were good in like sort of that shotgun pause and then quick explosion. I think Carson's okay at it. I think he'd still be better running downhill. I think, honestly, Penny's best on the toss sweep. and just when you toss him the ball and give him space. Mm-hmm. And I think Alex Collins runs much better off a straight handoff. So is that the kind of running we see? Yes. And then do we see more of the like old school play action off of it?
Yes, that's that outside zone. That is the flavor du jour of the NFL right now, and because of Shanahan, because of McVay, because of all that it sets up off of it.
And really not that different from Shanahan's father, right? From Mike Shanahan.
No, nope, not much different. Just a little bit more RPO, just a little bit more stuff you can do off of that. And that'd be the last phase of it, man, for all of the unbelievable success Russell's had and his efficiency numbers, Mike, being off the charts and where they are and everything. The one thing that he doesn't do in that stratosphere of players that he's with, that being Mahomes, that being Aaron Rodgers, that being Tom Brady, as far as efficiency goes, is the screen game. This team has not been a good screen team. We've wondered, is it Russell's height on screens? Is that like the only one area that there's a little kryptonite in his game because can't see over or buy time and throw it over people or whatever? But that would be the other element Sunday. Like, I'm super anxious to watch. Number one, how many just gimmies does he get? Number two, how much is he on the move? How many times are you getting outside that pocket where he is so dangerous? And then lastly, come on, man, you've got to be a much better screen team. Whether in the screen, as you said, cost you. That bubble, stupid bubble screen cost you a pick six. May have, in Salk's mind, absolutely cost you the game to the Rams.
Well, that and the fumble.
But how much better in the screen game to your backs, to your tight ends, to your receivers? How much better? Because I think there's a ton of room for that phase of this offense to be so much better than they've been in the past.
Well, I'm excited, honestly. I mean, like, in some ways, you're right. It feels like we didn't have the normal buildup to the season, but there is this just complete element of surprise of like, dude, I don't have any idea what this offense looks like. I know, yep, I've seen it with the Rams to an extent, the Niners to an extent, but I don't really know what this looks like, and I sure don't know what it looks like when Russ runs it.
Yep.
Are they finally going to look like an NFL offense and not their own weird entity? The idea of that being true is so like foreign to me, and it's not a shock.
Did they kind of do that through eight games last year?
No.
Yes. They still were. Sure? Yeah, week one in Atlanta, that was like, yes. Whoa, what are we watching?
Or a little bit. But it was still unique with the bombs and the, you know, I mean, like, it was still a little unique.
Little bit, but.
You're right. We saw some of it.
Good through
it. I've already forgotten about last year. we're on to Cincinnati. I've already forgotten about that.
we're on to Indy.
We're already moved past it. All right. That'll be Sunday. Early game, by the way, 10 a.m.
7 o'clock pre, 10 o'clock.
Kyle's favorite on the call, Jonathan Vilma.
Oh,
really?
Lucky us. All right, that'll be great.
I think I liked Vilma. I think you and I disagree on this. I think I like Vilma.
Talk to me next week.
You think I'm wrong?
Okay. I think you're also not remembering whether you liked Jonathan Vilma.
who's the...
And absolutely nothing worthwhile.
Who's the play-by-play?
Someone awful.
Marv's son, Kenny Albert.
Oh, Kenny Albert's right. Not awful. Okay. How dare you?
Well, Kenny Albert's figured great. It's Jonathan Vilma. You don't pair him with someone good.
All right. You know what? Stop it over there. Stop it. That's not right. You know what? You need a little break, Kyle. Why don't you head up to the 31st floor? Why don't you head on up to the 31st floor? Little after work happy hour. Take it to new heights.
Talk to me.
Serve daily, 3 to 6, 9 to close in the lounge. You know where I'm talking about, at Ascend Prime. Come here after work for the unbelievable happy hour. Sip mixologist curated cocktails and dishes, such as, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Sushi tacos. They're also known as crispy wontons. They go ginger carrot slaw. They go wafu daikon oroshi. They go fresh mango and your choice of tuna and tabiko, amachi negi, or king salmon and ikura.
King salmon and ikura.
Yeah, which one are you going with?
Is that
tuna tabiko?
Yeah. I'll have one of each, please.
There you go. Korean style karaage, aka crispy chicken, with, we tried to do this, gochujang chili. Do you think that's right? Gochujang?
I don't know. Uh-huh. I'm so caught up on the crispy chicken. I felt good about all
karaage chicken. So good. But gochujang chili, foie gras snow, celery, almond foie butter. We looked up what that was at some point. It sounded delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go Nidamago deviled eggs. I'm all in on any deviled egg, a.k.a. Soy poached eggs, topped with bacon, pea jam, and slow-braised Korabuda pork belly.
Love that Korabuda pork. Yes.
And then, of course, Brock and I, our favorite from our dining experience, the Ascend Steakhouse Wagyu Burger. How good was that?
Delicious.
Scale 1 to 10 burger. 11?
You guys have been talking about it for years.
It's true. That's where we had our breakup lunch. We had a burger.
Oh,
as one does.
We cut it in half. It was super symbolic.
I know. Like, we're splitting apart forever and ever. Anyway, the Wagyu blend burger patty, white cheddar, over medium egg, crispy shallot, arugula, frisée, brioche bun, the whole deal. Learn more, make reservations, happy hour at ascendprime.com. We're going to talk a little Mariners here and excited for Scott and Jerry. They finally get their extension, but in a kind of a different form of prep for us this week. Usually we send emails to each other, and Brock would always type his responses on his phone, which has always sort of blown
it's
my
kind of
mind.
Stressful for the rest of us.
Yeah, especially considering how large Brock's hands are. Like, I still don't understand how he does so much. I can't type anything on my phone.
No, nothing.
So today, though, Brock sent us his yellow, because he always writes stuff out in a yellow legal pad. And so he did all the, and he's got great handwriting, so it's easy to read. But he took a picture of his notes and just sent it.
And kind of at an angle.
I like right. it.
Which is fine, except thank God I have my glasses with me. At least I can read it because it's really, really small. So this week, you remember, Brock, when I turned 41, I needed glasses, right? Got the 1 1/4.
Mm-hmm.
And so Heather got me this great anniversary
present. The 1 1/4. I like you to reference them like they're Jordans. Like, oh yeah, I got the Salk 1 1/4. They're pretty slick.
So, yeah, the lightest prescription or whatever. So Heather got me these... She got me these, a really cool anniversary gift. It's like the size of a Zippo lighter, basically, but in it you can unfold readers.
Mm.
Have you ever seen those?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, do you have that?
A lot of old men have those.
You know, that's, come on.
It's when for you hit kind 60, of a rite of one passage. Of those things.
It's for going to the restaurant stuff, so I don't have to carry the glasses right. around, oh, but then no, I have to be like, Heather, can you tell me how much we owe?
The next one's the one you connect at your neck.
Well, so she, I'm not doing
yeah, they
that.
Clip in the no, center of the
no,
magnet.
Stop oh, it. No,
like
no,
a
no.
Bra.
It's stop like it. When we were out to dinner in Phoenix, Mike pulls out the Ebenezer, Brock pulls out his flashlight. Like, oh my gosh. What are we doing here?
Well, so Heather got them for me. She got me one. Not 1 1/4.
Ooh.
And so she's like, I don't remember what your prescription is. Like, well, I don't remember either. I don't remember anything. So I had to go up and find another pair of glasses to figure out what the prescription was, which, of course, I needed one pair on my eyes to read the prescription on the side of the other one. So thankfully, I have one in the basement, one in our main floor, one in the bedroom. So
oh
I have three pairs
gosh.
Of glasses.
Wow. That I don't is like, grandpa move.
Shut up. I don't like carrying them around with me. I don't want to be the guy with them around my neck, as you just said. So I just leave them everywhere. So that's what I now have. So anyway, I wasn't a one. I was a 1 1/4. So Heather's like, well, what do you want me to get you? 1 1/4? And I was like, 1 1/2.
You're like a kid trying to buy kids' shoes. Like, yep. I don't want these to only last for 2 months.
Something I can grow into.
Give me a half size large.
So she sent it back. The 1 1/2s came. And I see if it works. I've never actually... Oh, I can see.
This is great.
Yes. It was delightful because the 1 1/4s are basically not enough. These things are nothing anymore. Thank God I now
Get
have
them out of here.
Getting old is the worst. I don't even feel that old. How does Bob deal with this?
Oh, don't drag other people into this.
I'm just kidding. All right. So Jerry and Scott, Brock, after all the talk, finally got their extensions. How'd you feel?
No Theo Epstein. That's when I saw that. Like, yep.
That was your immediate reaction is no Theo Epstein?
Well, with
Get
his title.
Here.
No.
What is wrong with you today?
No, just with Jerry's title.
I'm the one
title.
Who hasn't had any sleep.
Whoa, whoa,
you were
whoa,
being
whoa.
Mean.
No, I'm just saying with his title.
They got Scott and Jerry. No Jerry. Yep. Come on.
Well,
no
that,
Theo?
Actually, that was the second thought. The first thought was good for Salk. He's been clamoring for this for years. So
no. Salk? Stop it.
Good for
Scott and then Jerry. Like, what are you talking about?
What?
Well, I guess they're not signing Connie Mack. Great. Like,
what? Good for those guys. They deserved it. They earned it. They absolutely have persevered and super, super happy for them, their families, and all of that.
Were you mad, Howdy? Were you mad that Scott got his extension without having to face you?
No, I do think that was should have been something you would have had to do before they were allowed to do that.
We'd like to give you this extension, but before you do, can you strike out
You're
Howdy?
You're going to have to be able to strike out Howdy first.
Okay. Were you happy?
I was. I'm more happy that they picked a direction and stuck with it than I am that they chose these two guys.
I think that's a good point.
That's all I really care about because the Mariners have been so in between and mediocre or worse for 20 years.
Rudderless.
That if you're going to pick a direction, then stick to the direction. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that for 20 years. So now that they are, I feel like it's probably a good decision.
I think what I would say, let's start with Jerry, then we can get to Scott in a moment. I think Scott's a no-brainer. The only possible hesitation on Scott would have been, are you going to re-sign Jerry? right? I mean, like, oh, maybe if we're going to bring somebody new and they want their own manager. Other than that, Scott, to me, is the manager of the year in the American League. I'm not backing off that. I think he's done a phenomenal job. He should absolutely have deserved the extension. Jerry, I think there were some questions, and I'm not saying that he didn't deserve it. Quite the opposite. I would have absolutely given it to him. But I think the last maybe question in people's minds was, can he make a team better at the deadline? Now, he did. Significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has changed in the last day or two because they've ran into a Houston.
But Castillo did his job.
But it's still true. They have the best record in the AL West since the deadline. Best record in the AL West since the deadline.
Yep.
They were 20 and 15. Now they're 20 and 17. So the Astros are just about going to be equal with them. But whatever. They've been phenomenal since the deadline. And so if your only last question about Jerry was, hey, the one time we tried to go for it in 2017, he brought in a couple of relievers who completely tanked and made the team worse. Okay, well, what did he do this year? Castillo got hurt, which was a bummer. That's not his fault. And the guy's now come back, and I think he's looked pretty good in his next two outings. And Toro has been phenomenal. They've been better since the deadline.
Yeah.
So I got to tell you, number one farm system in baseball. Team competitive and knocking on the door only three games out as of press time a year early. Making moves like Graveman for Toro where you get back another reliever, downgrade slightly, and add somebody for the next few years.
And don't overlook Joe Smith in that.
That's what I mean. You get Joe Smith back to equate to Graveman and you add in Toro.
Castillo.
Like, isn't this exactly what you want your GM to do?
Well, isn't this exactly, a little bit to Howdy's point, isn't this exactly what should come when you have had stability?
Mm-hmm.
When you know your organization inside and out, when you know the direction you want to go. We heap a lot of praise, rightfully so, on John Schneider. And Salk, I think we were talking about this on your show earlier in the week, that, you know, the Jamal Adams and Dwayne Brown and Diggs, and how do you work that out? Well, you know, you got like 12 years of equity between Matt Thomas, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, good cop, bad cop. We know where all the bodies are buried. We have tremendous stability and consistency. And, unlike in 17, where you don't have that background, where you don't have a foundation built. Foundation's been built here. And right now, this is a foundation for the first time in a long time that looks like it's not built on sand. And oh, by the way, the carpenters and the people that have put it together are here. Right? Jerry's here. Scott is here. Andy McKay's here. The personnel people are here. Even some of the assistant coaches have been here, right? So you now actually have some stability.
Yeah, that's a good point. They really haven't had a lot of turnover since Jerry got here. I mean, other than Jeff Kingston, who was the assistant GM before Jerry got here and ended up going to the Dodgers to go do the same job. And Jeff's awesome, and he had an interview with the Phillies this year. Really smart guy. But Justin Hollander's a very similar guy, and he's been with Jerry here since the beginning and has moved his way up. And I'm assuming he'll now be the GM. That would be my guess, that he'll end up getting that title. I would assume so.
Huh.
I mean, that's sort of what they've done in other cities, right? When Theo was the quote-unquote president, then Jed Hoyer became the GM, even though he was still reporting up to... I think the structure remained the same, but with title bumps.
Interesting.
I would assume that will happen for Justin, and it should. He's another really smart baseball guy, and if that's a way to keep him here, he interviewed for the Angels job, right? I mean, like, if that's an opportunity to keep a smart guy here, you probably take that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the field, you're right. Scott has been here the whole time. Manny Acta has been here the whole time. And I don't take him for granted at all. I think he's a really important part of what they've done. You mentioned Andy McKay, development. He's been here the whole time. This has not been the constant turnover.
It's done a remarkable job.
Perry Hill.
Yes. This is not Jack Cerensick rifling through people. This is some real legitimate.
Yep.
You're right. Stability, Brock. Good point.
And it just allows you then to, I think, be able to make some of these decisions, to make them at the trade deadline and know, hey, this is, what we need. This is going to be the next step in it. You know, all of these AA guys right now that we've hardly talked about, like, to me, this is just icing on the cake right now to be competitive in September for a multitude of reasons. Number one, it makes you all feel good. Everybody feel good around it that, yeah, man, we're a year early to what you just said. Number two, gives you a chance to evaluate and make some further critical decisions, which you're going to have to do on some of your personnel. Kyle Seager, Mitch Haniger, Yusei Kikuchi, how are they going to handle this month of actually playing under pressure, having expectations when I don't think anybody thought we'd be sitting here in September being able to have that evaluative tool as well along with what's going on with Hancock and Julio and sheesh.
Well, you got a little of that evaluation in September with Yusei Kikuchi this week.
Not good.
I don't see how you can pick up that option. 4 years, 15 a year, $60 million over the next 4 years. Doesn't there have to be a better use for that money?
I did some research in a couple of different ways around that subject, and him making $15 million a year would make him somewhere around, like, I think the 30th highest paid starting pitcher in baseball.
Okay.
That's not incredible money. On top of that, the Mariners...
But it's not nothing. I mean, that's a top one or two starter.
Coming into... That's a top one or two starter, but you can't get that for that money in the free agent market. You can't pay $15 million and get a number one starting pitcher in the free agent market. That's
right.
Not how it
no,
goes.
No, that's true. I get that.
So... And then coming into next year, they have $45 million on the payroll.
I know. They've got a lot of money.
$45 million. They are $140 million short of the luxury
but,
tax.
But you also have to look at that and say, what's the opportunity cost? Yes, you can keep him. It is a somewhat reasonable amount of money. Do you believe that he's going to be worth $60 million over the next 4 years? Are you willing to spend $15 million for a guy that may end up being lower on your... I mean, he may be your fourth or fifth pitcher if this thing works out. I don't know. I just don't think this is, like, hearing Scott talk this week, it makes me feel like they're getting close to a decision there. Did you hear Scott?
Oof,
he called it non-competitive.
Yikes.
That was non-competitive stuff. He said it twice in a 30-second clip. That doesn't sound like, hey, we want to keep this guy around for a while. And I can't, look, Howdy, I get what you're saying. He's got stuff.
And his stuff's not going downhill. He may lose it here and there, but he's not losing his stuff as the year goes on or
it's
his years go on.
Completely unpredictable. You never know when it's going to be there and when it's not. And when it's not, he doesn't seem to have any other option. Logan Gilbert pitched the day after him this week, did not have his best stuff. Found a way to make it through five, kept them competitive, dug through it, right? Little gritty. And we've seen that from guys in the past. A ton of guys. Right, they didn't have their best stuff that day, but they used their guile. Right, you know who Iwakuma was a great example of that. He wasn't a stuff guy, but when he didn't even have his best, he'd grit it and find a way and use some this and that. If Kikuchi's not blowing 97 by you, he doesn't know what to do. And this is 3 years of it. That's too much. It's hard for me to imagine that in year four. He's going to figure that out.
I mean, do you want Paxton next year for $8 million or Kikuchi for $15?
You know, now, Howdy, you do have a good point here. There is not a lot out there in free agency for the starting pitching market. So if you look at it and just say, well, there's nobody else. Where else are we going to spend $15 million? Okay, fine, but trade and pay. I mean, like, there are other ways to bring in some legitimate
do your young
pitching,
arms come into this conversation at all? I mean, I think you love what Flexen has done. I think by and large, yes, Logan's, you know, running on some fumes here to run it out, but you loved what he's seen. Marco's totally turned it around, mm-hmm. right? Do Hancock, do Emerson, do those guys project in a way where, hey, we don't need to spend $15 million, $60 million on Kikuchi?
Emerson and Hancock are the same guy, by the way, but we'll throw Kirby, who I think you
that's
meant.
That's what I meant.
Kirby,
gosh,
and Brash.
You know what you meant.
Some of those guys.
Darn it.
This Brash dude is
I like Kirby,
He's
by the
crazy
way.
Crazy.
Dude, Brock, have you watched Brash?
Matt Brash is nuts.
I've not seen Brash.
Oh, my God. Take, like...
I'm betting on Kirby, by the way.
That's fine. Just watch some video of Matt Brash. Take Paul Sewald's slider and put 98 as the fastball. Okay. He is at max effort, crazy delivery. He's awesome to watch.
There are times where Matt Brash throws a ball, and as soon as he leaves it hand, it's like Steph Curry shooting a three. Like, he lets it go, and then he just turns around and walks
it's
away.
It's nuts.
Like, Matt Brash's stuff is
he really is
fun. He leaves his hand, and he walks off the
mound.
Like, it's crazy.
He is worth, like, just a few videos. Like, he's like, whoa, what is that guy doing? Yeah, of course those guys factor in, Brock, but you need a veteran ace, don't you? And we
he's
talked
not
about
that.
And
you can't talk
that.
Yourself into that. He's not been that for you.
Where are you going to get a veteran ace? You want a Kershaw?
$35 million.
Okay. Well, then don't spend $15 on Kikuchi.
Correct.
Then it's only $20 million. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, you need a veteran ace.
Yep.
I don't know whether Kershaw's that guy because of, you know, his age and some other things, but isn't that the Justin Verlander to Houston move?
Yep.
Isn't that the John Lester to Chicago move? Isn't it to go out and just overspend if you have to bring in Clayton Kershaw? I don't see, and I'm sure there are other options, and I'm not sitting here beating the drum saying that's the only one.
Noah Syndergaard for $40 million a year this offseason.
Okay. I can't, Thor? Right? I'll take Thor. What do I care? It's not my money.
You haven't spent any money
for the last few years. So if you need to go spend an insane amount of money to bring someone in, great. Okay, yeah, let's say it's Syndergaard. Is he healthy?
He will. I think he's supposed to come back the end of the year.
Okay, great. So let me get a little glimpse of him. Let's go spend the money on Syndergaard. Great. There's your ace. Now, Brock, you can add in Chris Flexen and Marco Gonzalez and Kirby and Hancock and Brash and everybody else.
Bobby Gilbert and Justin Dunn.
Doesn't that sound kind of fun? Doesn't that sound like, okay, now you've got a rotation, but every 5 days, you're going to throw Noah Syndergaard. You're going to throw Clayton Kershaw. We're going to make darn sure that we have an ace. And if you want to get there in October, you can't have a Kikuchi start like that in September.
And you can't talk yourself into it. You've had him for a multitude of years. Like you can't. Oh man! Wow! If he takes a turn, if we get this stretch for him, man, he was our all-star. He did, but he's given you a huge body of work for you to evaluate. And I don't think that move or that position is one where you want to talk yourself into it. Now, if you have the finances to say, hey, you know, we can be $120 million payroll and $15 million for Kikuchi as a number two. And it's Kikuchi, and it's Flexen, and it's Marco, and it's Logan, and it's our youngsters coming up, and because you can never have enough pitching.
I just think if you have the opportunity to go spend big money on a real ace within a year or so, at least one, if not more, of those pitchers we just named are going to blow Kikuchi out of your rotation, and you're going to be on the hook for another $30 million over the next 2 years.
When is that deal?
This year. Decision? You got to pick up the option.
Either
this
he
off-season.
Can pick up his option for $14 million next year. Or the team can pick up.
I think his is even less than
15.
That. I think his is less than 14. I think it's like $6 million or something he would have to pick it up for. He's not going to do that. You either pick it up for the next 4 years or he's a free agent.
Yeah, his option, he can pick it up for 13 next year, or the team can go 16.5 for the next four. I think the most likely scenario is that they rework his deal and they come to an agreement on a 2 to 3 year deal.
That could be.
That ends up being somewhere between $12 and $15 million.
I think it's more likely that he's not here. And I wouldn't have said that until, and maybe I'm just reading the tea leaves, but when I heard Scott say non-competitive,
yikes.
I don't see any way he's here next year. I would have been right there with you until this week. Like, yeah, they'll find another way. He's obviously not worth $15 a year. Maybe he knows that. He likes it here. Maybe they work out a deal for $8 or $9 million a year and a 2 or 3 or whatever the heck it is. Not now. I don't see how that happens now. I'm going to guess that's the end of the Yusei Kikuchi era here in Seattle. And then the other part of that, Brock, is just Scott getting his extension. That's a no-brainer of all time, right?
Yes. Yeah, that makes total sense in every way. You know, back to our Shane Waldron, can you manage enough relationships? You know, can you build your culture? You can go through your kind of list here. Can you adjust in-game? Can you adjust in-season? Can you adjust your bullpen? And I think he has checked all of those boxes. And I think, frankly, he's gotten better with the experience as well. Right? He was a first-time manager. He'd done a lot of different things. He had a wonderful resume. But there was learning to be done, you know, by him as well. And I think he has. And whatever managerial boxes that you want to check in that same little template that we use for the offense coordinator for the Seahawks, I don't know what box he hasn't checked.
I know, and maybe this makes me more nervous going back to the Seahawks thing, but there just doesn't seem to be any substitute for experience. Now, we have other examples. Sean McVay certainly stepped into a head coaching job and immediately had some success, but gosh, it sure seems like in baseball, experience is invaluable.
I think you talked about that last week.
Yeah, I mean, we see it with the young players. And the difference between the at-bat that you get from Jared Kelnick and the at-bat that you... And Kelnick has not been bad. This is not a shot. But then what you get from J.P. Crawford or Ty France and... You just get better at-bats. And I don't think that it's that they're smarter or better hitters. We've just been there. They've
Kelnick's
seen
been kind of bad.
Yeah, he has. But I don't think it's been the quality of his at-bat. Honestly, the problem with Kelnick, and actually, Kyle, it's
feels
worse
like
than
it's
that.
It's impacting him in the field.
Well, we'll get there. But the Kelnick problem to me is not that there have been bad at bats. It's not an approach.
Yeah, he can draw a lot of walks.
He's missing strikes.
Mm-hmm.
He is swinging and missing at the pitches you've got to hit. That is significantly more troubling to me. If he was just swinging at pitches outside the zone, like, all right, well, he's a kid. He'll get this figured out, right? You're going to have to learn the strike zone, learn the patterns. They're throwing him. You know, strikes. He misses. That I did not expect to see.
Don't like that.
That is a bit of a challenge. And then Brock, yeah, he goes out in the field. He makes a mistake. He crashes in a Bauer. I don't know whose fault that is. But the reaction and the sort of public display of emotion like that yes. is rarely seen in baseball. I love that he's competitive. Yep. I wonder how long you can burn that candle.
Yep. But you have a skipper that does want, you know, his players to enhance that. He's not one that throws a Bradley wet towel on him. Sowell.
Oh, come on.
Gosh, I've had like don't four just the name. Shots
today. What is going on with you?
I don't know.
Are you
it must
punchy?
Be football season. No.
Why is he punchy? I think it's because he's been repressing his actual anger about a topic that we need to discuss.
Is that it? All right, we'll do that. Hold on. Brock, you've clearly been not yourself today, and I don't know if that was the fact that you were too afraid to say sack fumble to Ed Orgeron, or you know, if you just feel less of a man because of it. You had a good game. You're 2 for 2.
Hey,
right?
Come down here, your sissy blue shirt. Ed Orgeron's yelling at UCLA fans. Oh, no.
Is that what he was?
Yeah, the fan was like, "Hey, Coach O, hey, why don't you come down here in your sissy blue shirt?"
Oh, jeez.
Like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
And they went and got stomped.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah, not great.
So, Brock, you're 2 for 2 though with games.
Yes. Yes. So you can. No, I think it's a new recording time. It's a new day.
Is it?
Just, no, yeah, I don't think no.
Or is it like arguably the worst loss in the history of the Husky program? It's a little strange to me too because. How long has it been since the Peach Bowl? 4 years?
That was 16.
16. This is 21. Mm-hmm. So like 4 or 5 years. This is like right about the time that all of the kids who are watching the Peach Bowl and like the great recruiting that comes from it and all that, they should be really paying dividends right now, right?
No, a bunch of them all left after 3 years go to the league.
Oh, that's
Chris
already.
Chris Peterson left. And dynamics have changed since that.
No, I heard all about how that was going to lead them to greatness. I haven't seen a lot of it since.
Some good recruiting classes, yeah. I mean, got Sammy Heward. Mm. Unfortunately, didn't get a couple of the other kids.
Okay. Well, what's going on, man?
Oh, that was. Whew. So I'm up in the booth at the Rose Bowl. I'm calling the game. The Husky game started about a half hour ahead of time. They drive down the field, think opening drive, score touchdowns. They're up 7-3. Okay. All right. And look at the phone again at halftime. Oh, 7-3 still. Yikes. That's not good. Look at the phone at the end of third quarter. Oh my gosh. They're losing. They're going to lose. They ultimately did lose. And it's on the pedestal of one of the three worst losses in program history. I don't think I can put it with the UCLA loss in 90 that cost them a national title where they were double-digit favorites. You know, the Beavers loss where they were 35-point favorites in 1985. A bigger spread. I think this was 20 or 21 points. And Montana is a legitimate FCS title contender. They're not an awful FCS team. But it's right there. It's the bronze medal or silver medal. And be it the opener. And be at a time where you need to create goodwill with your boosters and your fans. In the Jimmy Lake era, for the first time having fans in the stands after an empty stadium from a year ago, it was absolutely what could not happen. And it did happen.
Well, you watched it. You ended up going back and watching it.
I did.
Why did it happen?
Well, I think there's a few factors. First of all, they played good enough defense to win. There's, you know, they weren't elite. They weren't as aggressive as I would have loved for them to be, but you know, they did what they had to do defensively.
They stopped an FCS team
to win that game. Offensively, it was let's go back to our Shane Waldron little checklist. We didn't know this was going to be it. I didn't write it on my legal pad when it was kind of your Genesis song.
Don't ask me to remember it. I don't remember all the things I said.
Managing relationships, a whole new language and. Well, it was year two of it, and last year they ran the ball decently, and you have every single back. You're supposed to have the best offensive line going. Bottom line, from a coaching standpoint, from just a pure empirical tape, Montana out-schemed them, out-coached them on that side of it, and ultimately out-hit them.
Yeesh.
I mean, out-coached by Montana?
An FCS team?
Bobby Hauk?
Yes. Bobby Hauk.
Hauk?
Yes. Hauk, good coach. Been quality coach. Got veteran staff.
Did he play for the Oakland A's or something?
Ooh, I don't think so.
I think
so,
it's Denny Hauk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, different. But
he's
yeah,
the one who got fired by UNLV.
Oh. Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Good but coach. Now he's at good Montana. Coach.
Took Montana to two national title games.
Maybe the Husky
I think
Shire.
I called one of them. Yeah, he used to be with Rick Neuheisel. Yeah.
Years
he was a Neuheisel staff at Washington. He knows Washington. He knows the magnitude of coming into that building and doing it. They and by outcoached, I mean just simply X's and O's scheme wise. Mm-hmm. They stunted, they slanted, they twisted, they blitzed, they brought people. And the number of times Washington's guys up front are grasping at air. Like they're double teaming, triple teaming at times a D tackle with two other guys free. They're not communicating. Yeah. They're whiffing. They got clobbered at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, you're down four wide receivers. They weren't scared of anybody you were running out there. They could play man coverage and still load up the box. I was severely disappointed. The ball did not get to the perimeter more. I can't believe Howdy is being quiet right now. Howdy, did you even watch a game?
He's comatose. I can't even imagine trying to spend another second on that game. Like, what? It doesn't matter how they lost that game. None of it matters. Right. It's over. They lost that. There's no conceivable world where a team with an offensive line that has a top 10 pick on it, that is widely consensus considered to be the best offensive line in the conference, with a veteran quarterback, a second year in a system, an undefeated team last year. Like, there's no scenario where it's okay to lose that game.
Then let's ask the obvious question. Is the Big Sky the better conference?
Goodness.
Get out of here.
The Huskies rolled out a home opener where their quarterback had an 8.4 QBR. Three picks, no touchdowns. The defense had one sack, no interceptions.
All right. So
this team was a complete disaster.
So let's ask the next question. Should he be the quarterback?
If Sam Heward were quarterbacking that game, I don't know how much different the outcome is.
Because they were so bad elsewhere.
Because they were so bad at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy's whole philosophy is to run the ball and play defense. And they could not run the ball.
Why did Sam come here? I just don't understand, other than that it's the Huskies. None of this seems like who Sam Heward is. And I'm not trying to start controversy there at all. I totally understand that he is Washington born and bred, and the reason you and Damon stayed here, and I'm sure a lot of it is the same, and by all accounts, great. I'm so happy for him that he's here in Washington. But it really seems like a tough fit.
Well, he loves his teammates. He's played with many of them, both at Kennedy and on the 7-on-7 circuit, winning national championships, winning lots of games, turning the program at Kennedy around. So he's got a lot of teammates. He loves them. I've talked to him. I don't talk to him very often, but I remember having that conversation with him in August training camp. He loves the group of guys. It's a good group. Chris Peterson recruited. Unfortunately, recruiting has fallen off the cliff in this upcoming class, and that has got to change. And that's what I said, like, as far as, hey, man, a narrative and changing perception. We talk about all the time with the conference, but even then locally, like, we got to change the narrative because recruiting and we're losing guys and decommits and everything else, and we got to get this building filled.
Losing it's guys, amazing. Did they ever ground. Get any guys? It feels What's like that? Every good player from Washington just goes to Ohio State. Like, what getting guys do they even do? I don't know, man. I'm with Howdy. I don't know that it matters how much why you lost or how you lost. It's that you lost. And Jimmy Lake right now, eye of Sauron, right? I mean, maybe you bounce back and beat Michigan and all of a sudden things look a little bit different and you can start to say, all right, maybe it was just a weird fluky day. And those things happen. I mean, like, you don't want to kill a guy for one game.
16 seed beats one seed in the NCAA tournament.
These things do happen. It doesn't mean the number one guy gets fired the next year.
But there are a lot of indicators that show this could happen. And when it does, it's a major, major problem and it becomes a referendum on your program.
Yeah, I think all of a sudden the Eye of Sauron, which we've talked about, is very squarely on Jimmy Lake. I know Kyle's being quiet because it's certainly on the head coach at Washington State as well. He's got his own multiple eyes. There's multiple eyes of Sauron that are staring
Talking
down Nick
about
Rolovich.
Losing games and not recruiting.
They've got all kinds of different problems. Yeah, and those aren't the only problems. That's like the tip of the iceberg.
But, oh, we got lawsuits. We got a little.
Kyle's been very quiet during this segment, but you know, I this is by no means a call for anywhere close to Jimmy Lake's job.
That won't happen.
But it's got to be, you got to have eyes on what's going on there, because recruiting problematic right now and losing a game like that with an offensive system that you describe that way and not being able to bully at all a team like Montana, that is very nerve-wracking for what lies ahead.
And it plays into both of the conversations we've had on this podcast. Shane Waldron is a first-time play caller. Jimmy Lake is a first-time head coach. And you don't just snap your fingers because it's not osmosis, because you worked with Chris Peterson and all of a sudden. And by the way, that was the right hire. I said to you multiple times, you sit with Jimmy Lake when he was a D coordinator. Everybody I worked with on our crews, like, man, that guy just, he just has a head coaching presence to him. He absolutely earned that opportunity, turned it down elsewhere, turned down other opportunities, wanted this job. But there is no substitute for experience. Scott Service coming in as a young manager, there is no substitute for experience. Jared Kelnick in the batter's box, there is no substitute for experience. For Jimmy Lake right now, as brutal as that experience was, as awful a pill as it was to swallow, one of the worst losses in Husky history, you swallowed it. And you have to learn from that experience then on the brutal end of it. But there's no substitute for it, and he's going to have to be better for it. And, oh, by the way, I think they'll play Michigan pretty well Saturday night. I think Michigan, unlike Montana, is not going to be bringing people all game. It's not going to be exotic.
They just watch Montana do it. They ought to.
Nope, because that's not necessarily who they are. They don't take those kind of risks. They believe, I think, in their personnel, their strength, and everything else. I think Washington will play pretty good D in the Big House. Michigan's quarterback's pretty average. They lost their top receiver to a torn ACL. They're not super scary on that side of the ball. If you can get that Big House to turn, like Husky Stadium turned on their own, right? And Jim Harbaugh is not the beloved son anymore. So I think there's enough factors there that it's going to be competitive Saturday night. You want to get that taste out of your mouth, there's only one thing you can do, and that's go and win.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I think that was some good rationalization. I'm not sure I believe that all those things will be the case. Is the game on Real TV?
The game, I believe, is Kirk Herbstreit.
Oh, ABC. Good.
Real TV. Yeah. Real TV.
That is 5 o'clock. Time.
I got so excited on Saturday. I was like, oh, I want to see what's going on. And I saw that like the Pac-12 network had new streaming things. So I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to go through Comcast. I like went to Pac-12 doc, whatever it was. And I was like, oh, well, I can watch. And so I started watching the game. I'm watching the Huskies.
Free preview or
watching
something?
For about 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, little thing shows up and says, I hope you enjoyed your 5 minutes this month of your free preview of the Pac-12 network.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I didn't. I was watching it to be nice. It was terrible. I didn't enjoy it at all. The Huskies are getting beat by a, you know, minor league team. It was rough. So no changes. DirecTV customers still can't watch.
But let's be really clear here. Okay, it was a divided house. All right. I don't want to give. We've just given
at your house
and enough.
Oh,
with,
right.
Yes. And enough with your minor league team nonsense. Okay, that's the University of Montana.
That's the Grizz.
Yes,
that is the Grizz.
Home of the Lady Grizz.
Do you think those guys all ran the M afterwards?
That's Haley Heward's women's basketball team running the M as their conditioning test on Tuesday morning.
We hiked the M. That was not easy.
Try running it.
Straight up.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's switchbacks.
Yeah, but
it's steep. That's a legit climb.
Haley said it was the first time she's tasted blood in the back of her mouth. And she threw up.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Did she vomited?
Yes.
Like Jay Buhner?
Yes.
I'd vomit.
So was she pulling for the Grizz?
Yes.
She was?
Good.
Of course she was.
She is.
And what
Grizz.
Did you do? So you're so upset about this. You've been snarky all day. My sister went to UMiami. My parents became like the biggest Hurricanes fan on the planet. Like every week, all of a sudden, we never watched college football my entire life. And occasionally, like when Doug Flutie was there, we paid attention to BC. We didn't watch Matt Ryan. We didn't care.
All of a sudden, it's all about the U.
My parents are like wearing gold chains. No.
Larry's got his gold.
Yeah.
Larry's got his grill.
Yes.
His grill. Yeah.
No, my parents, like every setup, well, we got to watch Miami. It's a big thing. It's like, okay, I don't do that, knock yourself out.
Vilma.
So where were you?
Well, I was at the Rose Bowl. But
I know
the family,
where you were, but how were you handling it?
Well, I was getting some updates, and actually Haley had to come home to take care of some stuff.
Did she talk smack to you?
No, but she was definitely cheering for Montana.
Does she text Sam and talk trash to him?
No, I don't think so. But man, wouldn't that have been incredible had Sam gotten into the game? You got Sam on one end of it. You got Haley Heward, a Grizz, on the other end of it. You got a house divided. They were chanting for Sam. I saw a video of that. Macy and Titus and Haley were chanting for Sammy. But I mean, be careful all these shots at Montana, Saul.
I'm not taking shots at Montana.
No, you called them a minor league team.
Well,
no,
they're a football team, not like the whole university, or certainly not their women's basketball team.
On Tuesday, you called them a high school team.
Well, I mean, all right. Just in comparison. And I didn't get all the way
through. You love that campus.
I did. I really do. I love Missoula.
All of Missoula.
I love that area. I think it's beautiful and... Yeah, no. And I assume Macy watched this and was like, well, cross UW off the list. I want to watch a team with a football team. I don't want to go watch that.
That is what I told Haley. I said, you know what? I'm so happy for you it feels awful for Washington, for Sam, but for you, your campus is going to be alive.
Yeah.
Like you have, I think, Western Illinois coming in to Missoula this weekend.
Oh, and just, when those two teams get together, you can throw the record.
But it was a huge part of Haley's decision. Like when she made it, it was, to be honest, it was one of the defining factors in the end. She had a couple different options. And, you know, when it came down to it, she's like, that community loves their teams. They love the Grizz. They love the Lady Grizz. They love the football team. I want to go someplace where it matters.
She gets some of that $675K that Washington transferred over to Montana. Does some of that come her way?
I think that's training table.
Yeah.
I think that helps pay for the training
table. She's like, hey, with that $675,000, how about you install an elevator to get up to the top of the M so I don't have to run all the way up there?
And I heard you talking about it's just direct deposit in this day and age. It's pretty easy.
I like the idea of Venmo. I think that was Justin's idea, like yes. Or Maura's.
Jen Cohen's know. Like, and now I got to Venmo him? Great. She's you like, have Zelle?
Not like, even allowed to do it in private. You have right? to do it in public.
Think, and yeah, she's putting the emojis on there. It's like Grizz, bear, baseball bat, dog crying emoji.
Yes.
Like, oh no. This is what I'm stuck with. All right. Hey, good times, man. This was fun. It's nice catching up with you guys. It's been a very interesting week in my life for sure. Some ups, some downs, all at the same time. So It is great to gather with three good friends and just talk a little sports. So excited we will be doing this, every week. Wednesdays now.
There are going to be a lot to talk about over the next 17 weeks.
I would say next week for sure. We're going to get our first view. Now, we know that you're not supposed to react too strongly to week one in the NFL, but is that different when you haven't seen anything else from your team yet?
Is that different than our personality? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll overreact.
I think we will both react.
Okay, good. We'll be reacting a week from now. We'll catch you guys then. Until then, Brock the Hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!